MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 208, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Monday, November 1st, 2021. Wow. We made it. People said we'd never make it to November 2021 as a podcast, but we're here.
We're here.
To observe National Calzone Day, mm-hmm. National Cinnamon Day, mm-hmm. Vegan Day, Cook for Your Pets Day.
Yeah. National Vinegar Day. I didn't know vinegar needed its own holiday.
Snuck in there under the wire. Yeah.
I mean, you know, vinegar.
I mean, after all that sugar that we've been eating from Halloween, we need a little vinegar to balance things out. Mm-hmm. Isn't Halloween is like All Hallows Eve? So it's really like the day before we have the official holiday, which is, of course, National Calzone Day.
Of course, yes.
That's
All Saints Day or something. I don't know what
that means.
I used to get stoked, though, because I went to a Catholic high school, and sometimes you get that day off. So right. Halloween could really get Halloween. Fucked up on Halloween in high school and then go to school the next day.
Well, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Somebody once told me they're voting for Mitt Romney. He said, howdy, neighbor, I am Ted. While he seemed all nice and fun and his mustache was real dumb, I just knew that asshole votes all red. Now that is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi, Maine, talking about how Ted Lasso, clearly a Republican. Come on, y'all. Let's be real. He's a lasso truther. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, Jack, your Pringles take seems to have offended a few people that they turned to mush. So in honor of that, I just want to sing this track to you. They say there is a sacred phrase once coveted by Frito-Lay, but you don't really care for Pringles, do ya? It goes like this from bottom to top. Once you pop, you just can't stop. A communion wafer, sexy, salty cousin. That's not true, Jack. They don't turn to goo, Jack. Crunch to Jack. They'll still crunch to. Okay, thank you so much to Marky Mark Aurelius on the Discord. I like that little gladiator reference and historical reference. But yes, they don't turn to goo, Jack, is what people seem to think. I do say this. They're not all chips, so they do something funky in there.
I mean, they've been specifically sued in the UK for being a crisp, a potato crisp that is not, like, I think it's less than 50% potato. So it's not just me saying that. I'm also not saying that they're not crunchy at first. I'm just saying that they are made from a slurry. But yeah, comparing them to communion wafers is not quite fair. The food that is best compared to communion wafers are those
Necco wafers?
Ice cream cones.
Oh. Oh, like the sugar cones?
Yeah, the sugar ice cream cones, which are not sweet. They're just made of communion wafer for some reason. I feel like they are from an era before we figured out how to, engineer.
If I were to ever believe in Christianity or follow Christianity, I would hope that the Savior, Jesus Christ, would want his body to have a little more seasoning than that.
Right, right.
If you're going to accept the Eucharist. But that's neither here nor there.
I do just sprinkle a little barbecue seasoning on it, like the barbecue potato chip seasoning.
The priest is like giving you the wafer. Yeah. Like, hold up 1 second. Let me get some of my pocket. A little flavor.
A little of the Cheeto dust. I think you can buy
Sweet
Cheeto
Baby
dust.
Rays.
Oh, Mark. Mr. Mark Zuckerberg. Big fan. We're not big fans of his. He's a big fan of Sweet Baby Sweet Rays. Baby. Anyways, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by another one of these first-rate guests on our second-rate podcast. She's a radio and podcast producer, writer, editor, journalist, and filmmaker who's worked for PRI, KCRW, Audible, as well as Israel's Walla News. Her reporting and commentary has appeared in the Washington Post.
Heard of that.
You might have heard of that. Yep. BBC World Service, Vice, and the South African Daily Maverick, among many others. And her documentary film, Swing Country, recently premiered at the Wisconsin Film Festival. She's also a 2017 JAWS Emerging Journalist Fellow, which I'm assuming means she broke some stories about the Amityville mayor refusing to close the beaches during a string of brutal shark attacks. Yep. Please welcome the brilliant and talented Yael Evan. Oh!
Yael!
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. That was a long intro.
I know.
Hey.
It's nice
that we have to let people know sometimes on this sad little show we have accomplished, distinguished guests on. So thank you so much for coming by.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
I never had a communion wafer before, but you made it sound really good.
Oh, it's so good. Delicious.
It's so flavorless, you know. Yeah. It's really, I remember, you know, the first time I pretended to like take communion, like, you know, you have to be confirmed usually, you know, like, or you have to have your first communion. Yeah, because you, all the pressure when you're like in a religious school, they're like, what, you're not like everybody else? I'm like, with my Asian mom and black dad who was almost like an atheist, I'm like, oh, yeah, I love this. Yeah. Let me hit that wafer real quick.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
Yeah, exactly. You're in New York, right?
I am. Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
How's the weather? Are we getting fall New York weather? Did y'all get a storm too recently?
We got a storm a couple of days ago. I think like because of that storm that no one was prepared for with all the rain. Mm-hmm. Now, like everyone was, you know, we were talking about it all day. And then, I don't know, I went to sleep and I think it happened overnight. And honestly, I don't think it did as, you know, nearly any damage. So it was fine.
Right.
I'm enjoying the colder weather.
Yeah.
For the next month or so, then it will be too cold.
Fully cold.
I remember this in New York. I don't know if it's specific to New York or it's just the most recent place I lived that has weather. But like we had a really big, almost like blizzard. There was over a foot of snow in the streets and it like all came down at once to the point that my wife was driving home from the hospital and like her car got stuck in the middle of the street. Like just that's how much snow was coming down. Like it just got stuck mid snowstorm and like I had to like shovel it out, but it was like still in the middle of the street. It got stuck like while driving.
Oh my God.
But then the rest of that winter, every time there was like a 1% chance of snow, the local news would be like, blizzard coming. Everybody like nail down everything, secure your children. And then it was nothing, but it was just like once there was a weather event,
right,
that's all they needed. Then it was a paca blizzard.
Mm.
Yeah.
I would definitely take LA weather.
Yeah.
LA Bring weather. It here. Stay in New York. But
wow.
And I'm so scared of like a situation like that because I didn't grow up with snow at all. So I would not know what to do.
Yeah, right, pollution right. might be doing that work for you, you know?
Yeah, it's winters are actually less harsh.
I've seen the projections. I think New York's going to be a tropical climate by the mid-century. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like Exxon always says, if you don't like the weather, just wait around 100 years and we will have completely changed it.
Yeah, you won't be alive to see it, but trust me, it's a little happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, Yael, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we are going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about. We're going to talk about Iowa's capacity for empathy for people who don't believe in science. We're going to talk about whether the Department of Justice is actually going to do something about redlining.
Please.
We're going to talk about a billionaire and amateur architect who is designing prison or dorms, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, not prison. Looks like. Well, it's a dorm. Yeah. It's a dorm. Okay.
And we will, of course, talk about the Squid Game moral panic that is coming for all of us. All of that, plenty more. But first, we do like to ask our guest, Yael, what is something from your search history?
Oh, so I moved a couple of months ago to a new apartment, and I realized like a week ago that my favorite spot for reading is also the darkest spot in the living room. So I realized I needed a lamp.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if it just happens to me because English is my second language or it's a common thing. But do you know when you have like a product in mind, like you know how it looks like, but you don't know how it's called? I mean, besides the obvious lamp, but I have this thing in my mind that it's like hanging on this shelf and it like I can still direct it to me even though the shelf is on my side. And anyway, I
know what you're describing. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I probably had like dozens or hundreds of Google searches just trying to kind of refine that lamp I was looking for. Eventually, I settled on something like clip-on light with adjustable neck.
Yeah, flexible neck. I was going to say.
Flexible neck.
Yeah, adjustable neck. Yeah.
I went through like 360. I went through like, there was another word. I don't know, like bookshelf, attaching to bookshelf. I also like
a clippy lamp.
And a lot of it like, they sell the clip-on as kind of the same side that the lamp is angled towards, and I actually need them to be opposite sides because the shelf is near me. So it's not like a desk, you know, when you need
right.
Sure. So I had to Google all these like goes both sides, like weird searches like that.
And then I 360 finally, goes both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Light. And what made it harder is that I was trying not to buy from Amazon, and Amazon is really good at understanding what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So all searches always lead there. It was much more complicated when I tried to avoid them and go to Etsy and
right.
Yeah. So that's many Google searches in the last few days. But I did buy a lamp eventually. So
nice. Congratulations. That's huge. Yeah.
When as you were saying that, I'm like, gooseneck is one thing you'll say too, right? Like gooseneck lamp.
I didn't see that.
I just think of that as how I hold my follow through after I drain a three.
After
a gooseneck.
When you pop trays.
Right.
I didn't
see gooseneck.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. I mean, again, there's so many ways to describe the same product. But in the end, I'm glad that you found the right
thing. Well, I actually end up buying a different lamp. But because the clip-on. I settled on something that just sits on the shelf. But I think I figured it out. And then, I just saw my options and I went with another type of lamp. But
there it is.
How is the move treating you? I know just from my time living in New York that it is oftentimes an annual, sometimes semi-annual occasion to move when you're living in New York.
Yeah, I feel it's been like 3 months and I still, and this is like a regular point of like argument between me and my partner when I'm like, well, we're still in the process of moving. And he's like, we're done. We're here. What are you talking about?
Right.
But I just feel like there's still, we haven't figured it out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You mean like in terms of like putting like where your stuff goes and that stuff? Like
exactly.
That element?
Yeah. And like all these things, all these adjustments of like all the swag, you know, made sense in the old apartment, but now we need a bigger one or, you know, and you're like slowly just getting to all these things. So,
and I think also like getting familiar with your immediate neighborhood too is also like part of that moving process because like, you know, you'll be like, oh shit, this is my store now. This is my bodega now. Or this is where I have to get groceries now. Or this is my where I get coffee.
Yeah.
Now.
Where my Subway stop is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been easier than the apartment stuff. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's something you think is overrated?
I was thinking about, I mean, it's going to out me as kind of old, but like celebrating birthdays. Sure. I started to think that is overrated, and it's mostly because I had a birthday in September, and there was this like perfect storm of, you know, COVID numbers I think weren't great, and I was actually recovering from a medical procedure. And so I was kind of quiet about my birthday, and also I just deactivated my Facebook and Instagram. Mm. So, and I think, I don't know what younger people are doing, but like, I think people really got used to like remembering birthdays based on Facebook.
Right.
And so really almost no one remembered that I had my birthday. It's kind of sad, but you know, just my friends and family. And I think with everything that's happening, you know, it's just...
Right.
And you don't have another system for the most part to remember. Yeah. So I just didn't do anything. And, you know, everything was just kind of a normal day. And I was like, that's, you know, as an adult, I feel like I can just celebrate. If I want to celebrate something, I can always come up with a reason. Like, yeah. I can always be like, oh, I never did the housewarming, or I want to invite people for this holiday, or like, I don't actually need that
date.
Well, and also now it won't be a problem because you can reactivate now that Facebook has changed their name to Meta, right?
So like, I did this after like a month or two, I decided to permanently delete, which I think just went into effect. So it's a good time, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Are birthdays among adults a bigger deal in the United States than Israel?
You know, I don't know, but I do know that something really funny difference I notice is that in Israel, and I'm assuming in other countries, like most of the world, like once you're like 35 and a half or like close to 36, you're going to start saying you're 36. And Americans are like, they're not going to say it until the day, which I find very weird.
We're so afraid of being old.
It's been hammered in our heads with modern marketing campaigns.
Yeah.
Don't be an old loser. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's also like this idea too, like as if you're like a sports agent and you're like, this guy ain't 20. He's 29 until he's 29, man. This kid's 28. Right. Yeah. You know,
he's still got juice in those legs.
Which is just a funny argument that I always see in like soccer discourse about people that always get into these arguments like this player is nearly 30 years old. They're like, well, he's 29. And they're like, but he'll be 30 in 3 weeks. And they're like, he's 29 until he's 30. Okay. And
that's not until this day. So why is that? Like, if you're already like almost there, it's like, I'm like at the half, I'm starting to switch.
So yeah. I still give my age in months. Like I'm a newborn. I tell people that I'm 491 months.
Say it in weeks, you're still in
a uterus. Yeah, exactly. That's funny though. That is such a telling difference about America.
I'm in my 120th trimester as a human.
But yeah, considering that, I guess maybe Americans are more precious about their birthdays. I mean, because that's the only day they're willing to actually change their age. So I don't know.
I think it depends. Yeah, like sort of where you're at. Like, you know, I know people who are like, it's my birthday week. I'm like, okay, fool. Do you need more attention? Or okay, fine.
Right.
Whereas I'm at that age now too. I have my birthday in September also. And my shit just felt like Wednesday.
Right.
You know, like, I think the one thing I really do to feel good on my birthday is look at the date and be like, yo, this is my one day.
Right.
And like, really look at my calendar. I'm like, there it is. September 15th. We're here,
baby.
We did
it, y'all.
Love it. And that's, to me, I think the most like joy I get out of my birthday is like looking at the calendar and be like, it's me, baby. And then that's it.
But it's between you and yourself. So
between me and my God, the cell phone.
What is something you think is underrated?
Phone calls.
Okay.
I mean specifically
like this movement.
Yeah. Oh, there is a movement. I'll join.
No, I mean like this is a theme we've been hearing sort of it consistently, and I like to hear it, but go on.
Yeah, I mean I can talk about like phone calls, like, you know, with friends and family, but I think like, you know, just recently I dealt with a lot of like bureaucracy and you know, just picking up the phone. And like, I just had this thing with my health insurance yesterday, and I picked up the phone and I waited on the line. It wasn't pleasant, but like today was fixed. And it's, I think there is something about just like, you're just there, you're waiting, someone actually talking to you, it humanizes you. You explain to them why, you know, you're in a bind, you need. So when it comes to like service providers, bureaucracy, whenever you can, and it's kind of frustrating that a lot of, you know, services and business don't give you the option anymore, but when you can.
It's all automated.
Yeah. And I do have that, like, I did get used to like avoiding the phone and you know, like looking for the option for like the online chat or whatever. But recently, right, yeah. I'm like, I should just call more. And also, I'm picking up the phone, which is radical. Unless it's scam likely.
Yeah. Right. But then now there's so many stealth numbers too that like pop in on your phone that aren't labeled like that. And it'll be like really deceptive because it'll be like in your local area code. And you're like, oh, maybe that's someone I know. And then you pick it up and they're like, you have missed your chance for a rebate on your Medicare. I'm like, what?
Yeah. But then it takes like a second to know. And then you just hang
up. And then immediately I say block number.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll cold call the scam likely numbers on my phone just to have someone to talk to, you know?
Yeah.
Is that depressing or?
No.
That's cool, right? Like, that's just a
that's
thing.
Cool. So that's I what actually, you're doing every time I tell you I'm too busy to talk.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. I'm actually going to call my friend now anyway.
Oh, yeah. I gotta run anyways because I got this person that I gotta talk
got
to.
Got this conference
about
call.
About my opinions on the local healthcare.
I actually have a call set up with the IRS. Like, I got to give them a bunch of info or they're going to take my money. So I got to go to get a bunch of Best Buy gift cards right now.
Got to talk to my friend about my car warranty. Apparently, it's running up and just getting their advice on that.
But I got options.
I literally just had a long interaction with like one of my local coffee places that I really like. That like fucked up my order and I had my 3-year-old with me and it was just a situation where I like couldn't go back to like get the thing that they forgot to give me. And so I just like wrote them an email and was like, it would be great if you guys like had a phone number that people could call.
They don't have a phone number?
They don't have a phone number. They have they have this like text a barista thing, which I assume
why
was
would
like,
you text the barista?
I like they said, oh, that's what you should have done is text the barista that they fucked up your order. But it seems more like a novelty thing. So anyways.
Right. Wait, what was your complaint exactly? I like how you like
I'm curious,
you wrote a strongly worded email. I'm like, y'all really
no, I didn't. I
line.
Like I was very like you guys are my favorite. I love this place. This is more
sandwich.
Just like this is more just advice for like and I just told the situation and that they like
here's some advice for your little store. Patronizing as fuck.
No, I'm
fucking with you. But what did they forget? Tell me what the transgression was. What was the mistake?
I got lunch for my kids, my wife and I, and they forgot my lunch and all the sides.
Wow.
And it also wasn't ready at the time. Like they didn't have my order when I showed up and then I waited
of Biden,
there
Jack.
With a don't think that I wasn't like thanks a lot Biden at the top of my lungs the whole time that I was waiting for it. But
wait, you went to pick it up and did you notice that it was wrong or only when you got home?
Only when I got home. So I had already been waiting there with my 3-year-old and like, you know, my 3-year-old has a very short attention span and like isn't super patient and he was hungry. And so when we finally got it, I just like grabbed it and, you know, left. And then when I got home, realized my food wasn't there. And when I wrote a very politely worded email.
That's like what's sad is like that's part of your shitty like lunch fate. Because when we would do group lunches, too, there'd be times I'm like, everybody got their thing except Jack. they forgot your shit. And then, and normally you'll be like, nah, it's all good. And they were like, no. I remember Sophie be like, no, we got to go kick the fucking door down and go get your burger. And you're like, I'll just get some.
It was just
stuff.
Writing emails.
I'll just smell yours and that'll be good enough.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about some news.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And, you know, it's good to see that at least one state in our grand United States actually cares about the little people who don't believe in science.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is cool. This is really cool to see. The Republicans are here to help the unemployed as long as the unemployed lost their job because they didn't want to get vaccinated.
No other reason than that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the vaccine hesitancy issue continues, never-ending story in this country. The most recent headline was like 12,000 Air Force personnel are still like being like, nope, we don't want it. We'd love to be in cramped quarters with a pandemic going on and no scientific recourse for safety. And now we're seeing this new really cool bill from the state of Iowa, which has just passed through their state House and I think potentially going to the governor's desk for a signature very soon. But they've, you know, like we've covered in past stories, a lot of people thought their employers were pump faking or bluffing when they're like, there's a mandate for our employees to be vaccinated. Also, there's going to be a federal mandate that we're trying to abide by. So get it together. And then they found themselves being like, I didn't think they were serious that someone who's a frontline healthcare worker had to be vaccinated against a pandemic. Oh. Well, now we have no jobs. Well, in comes the state of Iowa because they've just opened their hearts to these people who have no concept of altruism. They want to actually expand unemployment benefits to people that get fired for refusing. So this Republican bill, quote, specifies that employees who refuse the vaccine and are fired would not be disqualified from unemployment benefits. The bill additionally says employers shall waive a vaccine requirement for an employee who submits a statement that receiving the vaccine would be, quote, injurious to their health or well-being, or that it conflicts, quote, with the tenets and practices of a religion the employee adheres to. The statement also would not need to be attested by a physician or a faith leader.
Oh, okay.
So you can just be like
a general vibe.
Nah, my doctor says nah. And they're like, who's your doctor? You're like, that's illegal. A doctor can't attest to this. I'm just saying that's my sort of frequency I'm vibing at right now is I don't want the vaccine.
HIPAA.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like I think what's interesting about this bill, though, too, is like it's getting like a lot of opposition from all sides. Like, there are Democrats, business owners who are like, what is this? Like, this is actually going to put people at risk. And also, it's creating penalties for employers who are trying to follow mandates. Like, because they also want people who are going to fire them for not getting vaccinated to pay more into the unemployment fund as a result of this. So they're like, this isn't really sustainable in any way. Like, if anything, you're using like financial threats to get people to ignore a mandate. And then on the anti-mask vax side, they're like, this doesn't go far enough. Mm-hmm. They should throw the employers in prison if they mandate a vaccine. And also, like, they should also, this really just needs to be an all-out ban. So it's a very sticky situation in that.
And you probably have to do some like investigation into any of these like unemployment claims to see what it's about, which I don't know what the situation right now, but you know, for a while there was such a crazy backlog with unemployment in so many states. So it's like really creating so much more work.
Yeah.
It seems like, I don't know how in practice you really approach this kind of, I mean, would the aid like firing because, yeah.
Right. I'm curious. And I think that's what many people who are looking at this are like, this just sounds like a thing you're saying to like help anti-vaxxers feel better. Like, we don't even know legislatively, like, it's not very clear how this works and is going to not turn into like a runaway train that ends up just like bankrupting businesses. If people just start being like, if we all quit en masse, then they're going to have to force to pay into the unemployment. And then what? But the irony is just kind of next level, like that you have people who don't feel beholden to anyone also have the expectation of financial support for their selfishness too.
Right. Like, yeah, like, everybody else should pay for my ability to disregard their safety.
Yeah.
Maybe we fire them and hire them to work from home and help with the backlog of people who need unemployment support. That way they don't get unemployment. They just... I mean, that is the problem in America is that, you know, ever since Reagan, they've just been like bureaucracy has been seen as a bad thing. So there aren't enough bureaucrats. And instead, anybody who wants financial support from the government needs to become a full time bureaucrat just to fucking juggle it. So maybe that's what we can do. Send all those people to the salt mines of helping people get paid unemployment.
Also, just as an immigrant in this country, I want to remind people that like people are like, oh, why they're so, you know, vaccine mandates, why is the U.S. so forceful about them? Like people who weren't born here always had to get a lot of vaccines to just be here.
Right.
Like that was always, and they added COVID-19 as well. So it's like, if you come to this country, you're trying to get a visa or when you do a green card, like I come from Israel is pretty big on vaccines and I still had to do a bunch of vaccines. And like, otherwise I couldn't be here. So it's not like the US all of a sudden is like, oh, let's enforce vaccines. They're always enforcing them just on people who are not citizens.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Like, so you've been here for a while and you are still forced to get the vaccine like right away. Like, well, no, I'm just saying
I was a vaccine hesitant for... Only because I couldn't find my record, like my vaccine record from when I was a baby or my mom couldn't find it because I never held it myself. And I was like, I don't want to get like a second vaccine for something that I'm already vaccinated for. But there was really no like wiggle room, you know. So like when you come to the country, you have to get a series of vaccine. I was on a student visa. And then when I got a green card, like 6 years after, there's like another long list of vaccines. And if I couldn't prove that I have them through antibodies or vaccine records, I had to get a bunch of them again. So
And
that's always the process. So, and now they added COVID-19, which makes sense.
Right.
But just to like anyone that thought that like, oh, everyone here has the freedom to not get vaccinated if they want to. It's just for citizens.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. But yet here they are. Their freedoms are being infringed upon. It's amazing how that one word is just like a catch-all to just say like, no, the law is negated because freedom.
Right.
Human decency negated because freedom.
Yeah.
It's like, interesting. Well,
yeah.
All right. Let's talk about redlining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, I feel like most people who listen to the show would know what redlining is, but it was the, you know, racist practice of making it so that people of color and black households, Hispanic households could not get loans for homes couldn't become homeowners and therefore couldn't grow their wealth.
Yeah, quite literally drawing red lines on a map where there are communities of color and banks are like, don't invest there.
Yeah.
Don't allow people to get loans. We're not interested in those. And yes, like you're saying, a racist practice that was technically outlawed in 1968, but the negative impacts, we still feel them today.
I mean, yeah, just quickly, I mean, we've talked about it before, but it still happens informally in the real estate market with landlords and real estate agents claiming there aren't apartments available to families of color, or not showing them houses in neighborhoods where they believe or where they claim that a family of color would lower the property value. That's a piece of accepted wisdom in the real estate industry in a lot of places. That's actually a thing that real estate agents and landlords have been caught on camera and on audio doing in the last few years in, you know, backwater shitholes like, I don't know, New York City and New Jersey.
Gasp.
And, you know, LA, like the, yeah, it's just everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, and as you look, like you're saying, right, home ownership, like in America, the path to wealth accumulation is typically intersecting with property ownership, with owning your home. And when you look at the start of 2020, nearly 75% of white households own their homes, compared to 40% of black households, or 48% of Hispanic households, and or even 55% of other racial minority households. So the DOJ has announced that it's going to be tackling this problem with a new initiative called the Combating Redlining Initiative, and taking many approaches to sort of try and create some more financial equality, like strengthening their working relationships with financial agencies to make sure like redlining, like they're like, oh, like we can identify what's happening here and refer to authorities, also increasing coordination with state officials to weed out potential fair lending violations. But at the end of the day, like this, while this is a great thing, I think one of the biggest missing like facts that isn't talked about enough when you talk about like the income inequality or the just the huge differences that we have in financial outcomes for white Americans as it relates to more specifically to black Americans, but minorities as a whole. But I'll talk about black Americans. This relates specifically to chattel slavery, is that, you know, there have just been generations of black people who have been kept from attaining wealth. And this has been happening again since chattel slavery. And it's a huge contributing factor to the inequality we see today. Just like if you zoom out, right, and you look at the value of slavery, the 4 million slaves that were in the U.S. in 1860 were worth about $4 billion in 1860 time. In today's money, that would be close to $42 trillion. Right. That's what the slaves were worth. Okay. And then if you zoom out a little bit more and you say, well, what about the wages that potentially were kept or could have been paid to slaves? That comes out to about $20.3 trillion in wages if slavery was a wage wage gig rather than fucking slavery. Right. So you're thinking of, these are massive amounts of money that were taken off the backs of the slave labor and now just put into all kinds of communities in the United States. You also look at the Homestead Act, where people were given houses that were basically taken from Native Americans. That was mostly for white people. They say about, you know, 48 million people in the United States benefit from the Homestead Act, probably unbeknownst to them. And this is sort of the table that black Americans were given a seat at. And that's the gap that, you know, black people have had to overcome. And when you look at how redlining took another opportunity for upward social mobility away, it becomes truly staggering as it relates to redlining in like the 50s and 60s. This is when most people's grandparents were buying homes and things like that. Percentages of house ownership went from 30% to 60%. But in that time, 98% of the home loans were given to white families. Yeah. So at every stop, you're like, there's so much shit to overcome. And when you look at this redlining task force, I'm like, this is great. But also when you really think about what you are trying to, how you're trying to rebalance the scales, it's such a minuscule drop in the bucket, especially when you think about the, you know, 40 acres and a mule that were promised to newly freed slaves as well, and how the government reneged on that. And that's also trillions of dollars in wealth that completely could have been in the hands of black families.
Yeah.
So it's just a very interesting thing to mull over, as like the headline is merely talking about redlining without, like, come on, give people like really the foundational understanding of like why this needs to be addressed.
So what are they going to do?
I mean, in this instance, they're just saying, we're going to do better about discriminatory lending practices seriously. But then that's why I'm saying, like, I really want people to have the perspective of like, well, here's the thing. imagine if descendants of slaves were given some kind of reparations.
Reparations, yeah.
You know, and what that actually means to create some level of equity. Because at every turn, there was just these moments where the United States government were able to just sort of reinforce this caste system very cynically. And now we're only getting to a point where, like, we're talking about just a drip in the bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The $42 trillion, like, just to think about that $42 trillion worth of, you know, value that was stolen from black slaves, and that was used by the families, the plantation owners, to become extremely wealthy, and that money is still in those communities, like,
yeah,
to this day. Like, it's a thing that's so foreign to Americans. Like, I'm reading this book, The History of Debt, the First 5,000 Years, and the author, like, uses this phrase, a person who acts like he doesn't owe anything to anyone, and he's like, would use it as like a self-evidently like thing that stupid or unvirtuous people would do. And like, that's not a saying in America, because that's almost like the American ideal. Like, when you Google that in America, they're like, you don't know shit to anybody. Like, it's just people reinforcing that. And it's the idea that you know, we rewrite people's life stories for them, or only listen to the parts of their life stories that involve them pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. We, you know, this is what that Malcolm Gladwell book Outliers was about, is like, people who have advantages, they have their stories rewritten. So instead of focusing on the fact that Bill Gates was like uniquely wealthy and in a school system that had the only computers where he could have learned programming as a kid, his story gets retold so that he is a college dropout who like made it from nothing to becoming Bill Gates. And it's just like so outside of the American ideal to think about the fact that you are the result of a number of, you know, ancestors, people before you who got breaks or were robbing people. And like, that's just so hard for Americans to wrap their head around, I think specifically because we are founded on a country of, you know, slavery. And so it's a thing, it's a memory that they specifically don't want to have. And therefore we've built our entire ethos around the idea that we're all just starting from a blank slate.
Yeah, America started in 1920.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, don't look about anything before that.
Right.
And I mean, and I think that's why we're seeing just all of the panic around like educating people and what it means to teach history in this country, because it's about confronting the ugly shit that is part of your history that you have to learn from to be able to move past it, to grow past it. If you're going to always make yourself ignorant of those things, then, you know, like that saying goes, you're doomed to repeat it. And we are continuing to, and still shrugging our shoulders, like, what's going on? How do we still,
Yeah, you really helped me organize thoughts about just always feeling like this is a more ahistorical culture that I'm in and I live here. But I will say about reparations that also from like a foreign perspective, it's really not a radical proposal when you are, when you have family who's been through the Holocaust, because, you know, my grandma would get reparations until she passed last year from Germany. So it's like,
it's not radical. It's not unheard of. It's just radical to the very like white supremacist sort of mindset of Americans.
And, well, yeah, because you have to, for that to happen, you have to acknowledge that the United States is where it's at because of chattel slavery. Like, the amounts of wealth, untold, like, no one even came close to the amount of money that was being made with slaves in the United States. Like, the South was like the most profitable tiny piece of land during that time because of all of the slavery. And I think that's a huge part that, you know, it's like, just like with anything, with people like, what's my white privilege? Like, more than that, American privilege, or the foundation financially that this whole thing is set up on, is so fucking ugly. But again, it's easier to just say like, yeah, it was just like a couple people were doing it. It's not really like the main engine, financial engine of the country when it's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this task force is not going to try to necessarily deal with the sins of the past, but more like tackle what is still happening, like what's actively happening now with lenders. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah, exactly. Like this is what we can do now, but it's like one of these things where it's like somewhat the damage is so significant from everything else preceding it that it just feels it's really bad faith gesture to not truly observe that and say, wow, that's a lot of money that is owed to these people.
Yeah.
Because we basically just brought them over in bondage and extracted every last drop of value from these people's bodies.
Yeah. We covered a story last week about how one of the guys running for Virginia governor, the Republican, not surprisingly, helped a woman who was outraged that her high school age son was being asked to read Toni Morrison's Beloved. And like, she was the one making the ad about it. She was the one who, she didn't say what the book was, but acted like that was pornography or like some sort of just violent act of violence when it's actually a Pulitzer Prize winning, like one of the great novels. Based on actual events, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's violence to the American psyche for the reasons that we're talking about in this story.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about other stuff.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello.
And we're back. And there's a long tradition of rich people thinking that they are good at the thing, not the thing that made them like famous or rich in the first place, but like something else that they're just gonna like try their hand at.
Though just the soothing confidence that comes along with amassing just obscene amounts of money. Yeah. Yes.
You enough people just tell you you're great enough times and you're like, well, I'm probably great at this thing too that I haven't.
Hey,
really...
hand me that violin. What is that? A Stradivarius? Check this out. Yeah, just killed it. You're like, no, that was shit.
That sucked, man. It's, you know, the bubble episode of 30 Rock where John Hamm is so good looking that he thinks he's like a master chef. And he's like, here, try my orange Gatorade chicken. And Liz is like, oh my God, this fucking sucks, man. But like, can't tell him because he's so good looking. Like, it's that, but times a billion because it's billionaires and, you know, everybody just kisses their ass nonstop. And our latest entertaining example of this in the United States is Warren Buffett's right-hand man, Charles Munger, who is offering to build a building for a university, but only if he gets to design it badly.
I'm an architect and I'm a billionaire. If you want this money, I have to design it. It's essentially the agreement that he has with UC Santa Barbara. If you've been to UC Santa Barbara's campus, it's fucking beautiful. It's like on it's like on a seaside bluff and shit. And you're like, God, why didn't I go here? I'm just homesick and I just wanted to stay in LA. But anyway, he's apparently going to be contributing $1.5 billion. To build this fucking dorm, massive dorm complex or building. And his whole thing is, you know, this isn't his first foray into dorm design either, you know, because obviously wealthy people giving money to a college and being like, name building after me is normal. Like, that's just how business is done. So he's done it at Stanford and also the University of Michigan. And again, he was just saying, like, I've got these ideas, man, these architectural ideas that I want to see manifest into these buildings that I will pay for. And the Stanford residents, they seem pretty straightforward. Apparently, they're described as normal apartments. The Michigan Hall and the one at UCSB, most people describe that as, quote, most bedrooms don't have windows.
Hey.
And you're like, wait, huh? Hold on. I thought you had a very... very, like, what was your vision here? And Munger himself, he says that these buildings, quote, have a focus on providing ample interactive spaces for students, minimizing costs by maximizing the number of beds on a given site, employing the concept of repeatability.
Mm-hmm. But what is repeatability? Well, that it looks the same over and over again?
Right. And if you look down at a very crude sketch of what this building looks like, it looks like a fucking prison. You're like, these just look like a bunch of cells organized around like this central corridor.
Yeah.
We're failing to see what is truly transformative about this design, especially as it has no windows either.
Don't take our expert architectural opinion on this. The architectural expert who was in charge of like consulting on UCSB's projects, Dennis McFadden, resigned from the university's review committee. And in his resignation letter noted that because of Munger's project, he resigned and noted that this building would qualify as the eighth densest neighborhood on the planet, falling just short of Dhaka, Bangladesh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
but how did he get into business of designing dorm buildings? Like, what inspired him? It sounds like if you have the money to be like, I'm going to design this, you might choose like a different... like a movie theater or like an exciting...
Right.
I don't know.
I think he truly believes that he has this like vision that is going to shift the paradigm of design. Because again, I think as it relates to his wealth, you are the right hand of like Warren Buffett, the Wizard of Omaha. And I'm sure in your mind, you're starting to get it, be like, man, like I can't lose. I haven't made a bad financial decision in like 80 straight years.
Because
how could this
they're
not extend to
their,
building design?
Because he's probably doing the thing that all Americans get to do when they get rich, which is rewrite their story so that every one of those financial victories was like a underdog story that they just like pulled out because they're a genius instead of like, yeah, you started out working for Warren Buffett, built up enough wealth that you were able to take advantage of a rigged system over and over again. But
and also, yeah, the desperation of, you know, educational institutions, because they're like ridiculous profit models where they're like, they're courting money to be like, yeah, we got to improve this. I guess we'll let this fucking idiot be like, hey, man, I got these ideas. I'm the next fucking Frank Lloyd Wright. I got $1 billion. You're like, great. Uh-huh. And then as back to that thing about McFadden, the architect that resigned, he was just like very just straightforward points out too. He's like, also, the university provided no justification for ignoring well-established research that natural light and views of the outdoors are vital to healthy living.
Yeah.
But they were just saying like, well, the thing is, we're bound to Munger's vision because that's the agreement we have.
And this is, in America, the argument against taxing billionaires is they do so much good, though, like when they donate, like the Langone Medical Center, Ken Langone, the guy behind Home Depot, like he did that. And just because he's
racist every day of his life,
right, just because he was racist and demands that we let him do every third open heart surgery until he gets good at it has nothing to do with the, it's like,
oh, my God.
It's free money, man. Free money.
Right.
What are you
He's like,
do?
I just saw Patch Adams, man. Yeah, I could do that, man. I could be a pediatrician. I can get laughs from kids. Do I have any medical training? No. But I have $1 billion and your funding is dire. So what's it going to be?
It is really like I don't know. That's something that we should like do a whole series on, is just like people thinking that their skills at one thing will translate to something else, and just how
the Dunning-Kruger cast,
it almost never ever becomes
like somebody on Twitter tagged me in a video of DJ Khaled playing a guitar that he was like gifted from the Bob Marley thing, and they're like, yo, what's your take on this? And I looked at it, dude, DJ Khaled can't play a fucking guitar. Aww. And he's like, yo, thank you so much. Like, no chord, nothing. It's out of tune. He's just like open strumming, but then like half touching the frets.
Mm-hmm.
And he was acting like he was fucking
Shrek.
Like Bunny Wailer or some shit. You know what I mean? You're like, what the fuck? This man is dead ass serious, looking in the camera like he's giving people the performance of his life. And I'm like, this Dunning-Kruger guitar solo right here.
Yeah.
He truly, again, he's like, I can't lose when it comes to music, even if I quite literally don't know how to play this instrument.
And that's a good podcast. Also, like, at what point in your life are you supposed to stop
trying new things?
Right. At least enough to know to respect the outside opinion.
At least
not
publicly try them.
I feel like you could do a whole show and like, you know, I'm fascinated with the architecture in Dubai. And like, there's this one like YouTube channel where like city planners or architects are just destroying Dubai. They're like, this place makes no fucking sense at all. Like, they're like, first of all, look at where this, like, just like the most basic things they're pointing out. And you're like, damn. But again, you're talking to people who are so fucking wealthy, and their whole thing is like, we're gonna have the biggest sky piercing phallic building on earth.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit about sustainability or building practices. Then you get these like weird, half thought out places that are just being like, this thing's going to be like just a total disaster in a few years.
Yeah. When my wife was in medical school at Mizzou, and it was around the time that they were opening this new arena that was gifted to them by the Waltons, you know, the Walmart heirs, and they named it after their daughter. I forget what her name was, but
something like Cassidy.
Right, the Cassidy Sports Arena. And like right as they were about to open it, her like somebody came out and she was like still like she had graduated college 2 years before. And somebody came out and was like, yeah, I wrote all her papers for her. She just paid me to write all her papers for her. And she didn't even go to Mizzou. So already it was like, what the fuck are y'all
doing?
Wait,
what?
Yeah, it's wild, man.
Dude, people had too much fucking money, man.
Too much money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but God forbid they actually just fucking pay their taxes and we're able to.
No, I'll name a basketball arena after my newly graduated daughter from a different school.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Squid Game moral panic. I have finished Squid Game, Miles. You have finished Squid Game. We're going to talk about it on a future episode, but for any Zeitgang who are kind of muddling their way through, next couple days, we're going to do a dive into our feelings on Squid Game. So, you know.
I haven't watched it, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's good. Worries. We're gonna hold it. We're gonna give them fair warning. Let them
This will be a spoiler free discussion of the show.
Yeah,
you know, but you have a basic understanding of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then
I don't.
More...
Sorry.
Oh,
I don't
know how okay. I said. Okay. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I know people like it.
Right. And I think
I haven't tapped into it at all.
Many reasons. It's a very, like, you know, violent but poignant like critique on capitalism and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the current tone on Earth, it's just become the most popular show ever that Netflix has had. Yeah. And I think now, and just generally now, because like you're saying, like even you as someone who hasn't seen it, like you have an idea because there's just so many memes and articles that just by osmosis, you probably have a general idea. Yeah.
So the ultimate sign that it has become important in the culture is that it has created a moral panic across the globe. So people are up in arms, parents in particular, because there is evidence of kids imitating the games from the show in real life, which would be a little bit more concerning if they weren't all literally schoolyard games for children. Like that, the point of the show is that they make these contestants play schoolyard games for children. The stakes are you die. But yeah, everywhere from Canada to the UK to Australia, this is apparently considered a problem. And it's really amazing that it's really having to bend over backwards to come up with a reason to be offended by this show.
Right. Is it because they're like, I mean, because they, I'm presuming they don't have firearms like in the TV show.
No, they're just like playing the game. Like one kid came home and like told their mom that like people were saying they were playing Squid Game games on the playground, and the mom was like terrified. But Squid Game games are red light, green light, like, and fucking marbles. Like it's not. It's games that I played in gym class.
Not like fashion a shiv out of a popsicle stick and buck 50 your classmate. Like that's not a Squid game.
There was one example, a Belgian school issued a warning because a student said they were playing the game and then punching the person who lost, which again, not great, but again, a thing that all kids do and have done since the beginning of time. Elementary schools in New York State are banning Squid Game costumes from their Halloween celebration because of the violent message aligned with the costume, which I dressed like I talked about this on an episode last week. I dressed as fucking like somebody who had been murdered basically every day for every Halloween costume. Like,
and
it was,
you dress
like
soldiers, like you dress like other characters from movies who
people. I think this is the thing, right? This is part of the American psyche. You can't look at a soldier and think of foreign policy and imperialism. You look at that and you go, that's a job. That's an army guy.
Mm. Yeah.
But then because I have no concept for these other things yet. Yeah, it's just funny that with Squid Game, it's like the violence.
I mean, the other meme that was taking people by storm this Halloween was a bunch of memes of young children hugging Michael Myers. Like that was one of like, yeah, right. Michael Myers from Halloween. There were a bunch of viral videos of like, adorable, this kid is hugging Michael Myers, who, just to reiterate, is only famous as a character who butcher knifes teenagers to death.
Oh, he's not a child development specialist.
Right.
Misunderstood childhood preschool teacher.
And to your point about soldiers, people are acting like this is unprecedented that like adult culture, like adult violent culture would trickle down to children. I grew up watching Rambo, The Force of Freedom, which was a cartoon in which the protagonist was Rambo, the character from the R-rated movies who like just murders people, where there's like a body count of thousands.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is a real double standard where, you know, I think people would be less concerned about this if all these things weren't attached to a show that is a critique of late stage capitalism. That's pretty poignant, you know.
Is it also because it's not American, maybe? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I think
it's
probably
not in English.
Yeah.
Like,
Look, yeah, with America, there's all, I would always bet on xenophobia big time. Yeah. Whenever, if that's an option.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's what's really interesting is like you're saying, like there were kids who like looked like a, they had like a fucking saw blade in their fucking head.
Yeah.
And they're like taking a spelling test and like, oh, that's cute. Yeah. And that's why I'm really curious, what exactly are they saying? Like, where's the consistency if they're even able to articulate it? Or, because on some level, I do also just count on some school people to just be like, not really know what the show is about. They just heard like, oh my God, it's so violent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're just like, that's not good for kids. And then that being the only reason, without then taking the thought experiment further to be like, well, I guess that Derek Chauvin costume was okay from those other kids. Like, right. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. And I mean, this is also like parents being outraged about something that is popular, like is an age old tradition around the world from comic books. There's like a gay panic around comic books, video games, Dungeons and Dragons, to the works of Charles Dickens. Victorians worried that racy novels were causing children to grow up too fast and robbing them of their childhood. And it was, you know, they just wanted them to read the Bible and not right. Charles Dickens. The Bible was
pretty violent too, so
exactly.
At least
my Bible. I don't know about the New Testament.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure it's pretty violent
too. Oh, you gotta check out the New Testament if you like violence. There's some freaky shit towards the end. Real freaky shit towards the end. But you know, just let the kids play. You know, I remember in my school they tried to ban like West Side Connection.
Oh really?
Yeah, because they're like, but that's more, I think, racist, too. They're like, we don't want them doing black stuff.
Yeah.
Because I was famously reprimanded for throwing up West Side in a class photo.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In front of everyone. Tore up the picture. But
in front of God and everyone.
In front of God and everyone. And I say, you know what? God is an OG. And he holds it down for the West Side.
Well, Yael, it's been such a pleasure having you.
Yeah. And now I want to watch the show. I will watch it now.
Nice. Where can people find you and follow you?
Well, as I said, I'm no longer on Instagram or Facebook, but I'm still on Twitter.
Yes, the health food of social networks, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm just not very active, but I am still there. I'm at Yael Evenor, so it's just my name in a row. That's it.
Boom.
Not a lot of Yael Evenor out there, I don't think so.
Yeah. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yeah, I don't know I've been enjoying, but there's this tweet. It's really the responses to that tweet that someone had tweeted the other day. I think this user is like 18, according to their bio. And they tweeted, I done 2 COVID tests and I'm negative, but I feel so ill and cold. WTF, anyone else had this? And then everyone is just like, just bashing her for like, whatever happened to common cold? Like, people forgot that it exists. Like, RIP common cold. And it's really funny, just like 800 like quote tweets, and she's like, lol, didn't expect that reaction. I guess it is cold. Like, it's just, and it's kind of true. Like, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic that it was more like, you know, I would talk to my mom and I'm like, are you being careful? Because I would hear a cough, and she's like, people cough before COVID, just relax. But now it's just kind of like, I do the same thing. Like, every time I feel slightly ill, I'm just like, I have COVID.
Yeah,
it happens. You
know? Miles, where can people find you? What's the tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Also, the other show, 420 Day Fiance, where we're talking 90 Day Fiance with Sophie Alexandra. So come through with that. Man, there's been so many good tweets. Where do I even begin? Let's start with this one. This is from at Nurse Chocs, C-H-O-C-S. Tweeted, I love irregular texters because there's a mutual understanding between us that it's okay to text back 5 days later with no bad vibes.
That is me.
That's me, baby. It's not bad vibes. I just have a fucked up relationship with my phone and I don't like using it all the time. And then another one from Yadoye, past guest at Yadoye _ tweeted, the plural of Kid Cudi is Kids Cudi. So I just want to put that out there for everybody.
All right. It's good to know. Little grammar lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. You can find me on Twitter, Jack_O'Brien. I was enjoying a lot of the Mark Zuckerberg, you know, responses. Somebody
Metaverse.
Tweeted. Yeah. So Ben Acker tweeted, that ought to do it. And then attribute that to Mark Zuckerberg. Alex Kerr, Alex Kerr tweeted a screen cap from the metaverse video and said, still thinking about when Mark Zuckerberg said this. And then the closed captioning makes it look like he's saying, if you die in the metaverse, you die in real life. And then John Merriman tweeted, look, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I say things three times. I just like
there
that.
It is.
You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and our website, dailyzeitgeist.com. We post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy today?
Man, I messed up. You know, I should have suggested this song before Halloween, but I just want to go out on a spooky track. This is Viernes 13, you know, Friday the 13th. A very spooky track by the Latin rap god Vico C. People say the father of reggaeton, but this is an old school track. I just love the production and the Spanish language rapping, and it's talking about Jason and shit, and it's just dope. This is like such a great retro texture sonically. So let's go out on this Viernes 13 by Vico C.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever podcasts are given away for free. That is going to do it for us. But we're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
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 MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.